minutes ago. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 237. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and temples and Ketchup dance as we go to Bali. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, it may not have been to avoid baggage fees, but there was a Romanian who stowed away aboard a 97-minute flight from Vienna to Heathrow. He was lucky that he did not die because temperatures in the unheated cargo hold got down to 41 degrees below. In good news story for an airline, in this case American Airline, a very resourceful flight attendant who has a pilot's license was able to take over when the co-pilot on a flight into Chicago fell sick with flu-like symptoms. That story has a happy ending as the plane landed just fine. And then you've heard me talk before about unclaimed luggage and strange things that they auction off. Hopefully this would never happen, but a Southwest employee found a shipment of human heads on their way to Fort Worth. 20 to 40 human heads were being shipped to a medical research company. Not sure how this happened, but I'm sure that heads will roll. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. Normally, I'd have all the announcements at the end of the show. I did want to tell you that there may not be a show next week. It is, though, very close to the five-year anniversary. In fact, next week's show would be the closest to the five-year anniversary on July 2nd of the first publication of a show from the Amateur Traveler. So if you're interested in leaving a greeting, go to amateurtraveler.com/contact and leave me a message. And if I get enough, maybe I'll put together a show with those. And as a question, why don't you tell me what your favorite Amateur Traveler moment was? I do want to remind you that July 8th, the reservations that we've made for the Egypt photo tour expire. We may or may not be able to get you on the tour after that, but we certainly can before that, so you might want to use that as your deadline. And then speaking of traveling with the Amateur Traveler, we're starting to talk about a Holy Land tour, a tour to Israel, in something like June of 2011. If you're interested in that, drop me an email. That would be a photo tour also with Ralph Velasco, who we're doing the Egypt photo tour with. So amateurtraveler.com/tours. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sam Oppenheim, who's come to talk to us about Bali. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be back, and I'm very excited to be in the four-timer club.
Is this the fourth time? We talked about trekking in northern India, and we talked about what else?
Cuba.
Oh, right.
And what was the other one? Laos? Did I talk about Laos with you?
I don't know. That could be. You know, we're almost about to hit 5 years with the Amateur Traveler, and I'll be honest, I can't keep all the guests straight anymore. I remember having people on, and I remember enjoying it, but I don't always remember who came on and talked about what, and I've been known to say, oh, no, we haven't done a show about that, and then find out we have. So anyway, welcome back to the show. You went to Bali, which is in Indonesia. Uh-huh. What led you there?
I was doing a few months in Southeast Asia. And I had heard great things about Bali, so I went ahead and made the trip there.
And you heard great things. Perhaps I could get you to be a little more specific. We have high expectations from people in the Four Timers Club.
Yes, indeed. My parents had been to Bali in the late 90s, and it was the only place they've been to in Asia, and they raved about it for years. A lot of my friends had been. As you know, it's one of the most traveled to vacation destinations in Southeast Asia, probably after Thailand, and maybe they're even seeing a tourist bump with the local closures of tourism in Thailand, or at least reluctance to visit.
Now, Bali has also had some issues with that. Have things settled down there? I haven't looked recently, for instance, to see what the travel warnings are for Bali.
Right. They've had two bombings, maybe three now. It's a very small island, so those have made a lot of news. It's also got a lot of tourists. However, in the scheme of things, I think it's safer, or as safe as most places. There haven't been any kidnappings or violence targeted against tourists except for the two or three terrorist bombings. The one big one did kill a lot of people. A lot of them were Australians.
Right.
And there's a monument to that.
Oh, interesting.
But that was many years ago, and there's a lot more security now. I still think, as with all security, if someone's willing to work really hard, they can get around it. But I think I felt very safe there. And statistically speaking, it's very safe. I don't think there's any current travel warnings.
Okay. So you spent a week in Bali. What would you recommend for a week in Bali?
Well, first of all, I want to start off with a broad idea, just saying that you can go to Bali if you are a backpacker. You can go to Bali if you're a retired couple. You can go to Bali if you're a millionaire. And you can go to Bali if you're a college student. What I'm going to recommend is mostly related to what I enjoyed, but I can also touch on a few little ideas for people who have a different budget or a different outlook.
And then I think you also had some suggestions for people who had more time than you had.
Correct, of course. You could spend longer than a week in Bali, and I did not see the whole entire island, even though it's very small. I'm pretty sure you could drive around the whole island in less than a day. I'm guessing it would take about 8 or 9 hours to drive around the whole island. So it's kind of like visiting a Hawaiian island.
Okay.
And it's similar to Hawaiian islands. In fact, that's the closest topography that I could think of, you know, volcanic cones in the middle of the island and ascending lush vegetation all the way to the beaches around it. It also has black sand beaches, I think, as well. As far as what I recommend, I would recommend staying in Ubud, which does not have a beach. That's the cultural capital, and it's about an hour north of the airport. And Ubud is the artistic center of Bali. It's where you can go shopping and buy arts. It's where there's a high density of restaurants. There's a lot of fun activities for tourists to do, including dance performances, classes, cooking classes, massage therapy. There's also a huge expat community living there. It's a very vibrant cultural place. And for those of you who have the new iPad or any other Wi-Fi device, Wi-Fi is plentiful.
Okay. And I'm going to guess, since I know your love for travel photography, that it's also a place where you found lots of things to take pictures of, like the dance performances.
Absolutely. It's gorgeous. If you want to do nature photography, you have to get out of the city. And the buildings are not particularly fantastic, except for the nice hotels. But yes, I have a lot of photographs, which I hope you'll be able to show the podcast listeners, of dancers and other activities in Ubud. In addition, as long as you're visiting Bali, I hope you would get out of Ubud, although you could easily live in Ubud and never leave. It does have a lot to do, and it's fantastic to relax in.
And before we get out of there,
should I talk about where to stay?
Yeah, absolutely. But did you have specific recommendations, both on the where to stay as well as which performances or which cooking schools or those sort of things?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I happened to end up in Bali with two friends of mine, one of whom had just finished reading Elizabeth Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love, which I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with. It's being made into a motion picture, and it was a hugely popular book. So we actually hunted down two of the main characters from her stay in Bali. And I can recommend the healer woman, who the main character in the book, and this is a spoiler alert for those of you who haven't read it, she helped her buy more property to have a permanent place for her business. So we went to her new place, and she does therapy, she cooks lunch, all organic food, and she does all sorts of treatments, massage and other sorts of healing treatments, and she has tons of powders and Ayurvedic pills and all sorts of cool stuff. I can recommend that experience. Okay. She also recommended a man named Ketuk Lier, who we had a little more trouble finding. He's a fortune teller who reads your palm, but I cannot highly recommend him. It was a very fun experience going to him, and he's a wonderful character, but I didn't feel like the experience was necessarily as rewarding as she made it sound like in the book. He read me and my two friends' palms. His readings were very similar, very entertaining, very fun, and I sort of recommend it, but so-so as far as fortune telling goes.
All right.
As far as the shows, there are three different kinds of dance performances in Bali. One is called legong, L-E-G-O-N-G, and that was my favorite. The legong performances are like every other night, I think, or maybe in more than one place. And I don't know if I wrote down the place I went to, but I'm pretty sure they're all just as good. The one I went to was not one full-length performance, but rather eight different performances in the course of 2 hours. So some of it was instrumental Balinese music, which is that stuff that you've probably heard somewhere. It's a little bit eerie, and it's kind of atonal sometimes, and It's a lot of percussion, including cymbals and drums. And then the Ligong dance are these women or young girls who are wearing tons of jewelry and colorful costumes and these headpieces, and they're moving very strange, jerky movements to that same type of music, and sometimes rolling their eyes or making strange motions with their eyes the opposite of their body. It's a fascinating dance performance. It's beautiful. It's not something I'd necessarily want to learn or watch very often, but as a one-time experience, it was phenomenal. Another type of dance there is Kechek, which, have you ever heard of the movie Baraka?
I don't think so.
Baraka is a film that has no narrative. It was shot in 70 millimeter, and it's like all over the world, 70 different countries with a score. And one of the scenes is a bunch of dancers doing the Kechek performance, where they're all lying down and sitting up and waving their hands and going, Kechek, check, 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 whew. But anyway, it was hilarious. My friend and I, we used to watch that movie when we were in college, and it's a really beautiful, beautiful movie. And that scene was memorable. So when we realized that it came from Bali and was being performed, we had to buy tickets and go see it. And it was very, very rewarding and fun. We Googled it and found out that it was actually invented by a German man who was living in Bali. So he combined traditional dance and the story of the Ramayana with like his own idea of choreography and what he wanted to show. But now it's become, over the past 70 years, a part of their culture, even though it was invented by a foreigner. It's beautiful, fantastic, exciting, and fun.
Now, I'm guessing that you're in the audience here with a lot of tourists. I mean, this is a fairly heavily touristed place. Okay.
In both cases, with the Legong and the Kechek, I was absolutely in a tourist show. It was all tourists paying to watch it, and it was professionals who were doing it for the tourists. However, as in a lot of cases in the developed world, that's the way that these things are done and how the traditions are kept alive.
Right. I had sort of two different feelings as I said that. One is that, well, that's helping keep the tradition alive. And the other one is that it always feels a little less authentic in some ways, especially if it's written by somebody from Germany. But interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
And then you talked about some place to stay.
Right. There are two places to stay that I'm going to mention. First of all, I used the Lonely Planet when I arrived, and I've stayed at a place called Sanya's House. And I can say that it doesn't matter where you stay, because almost all the places are probably very similar. They tend to have bungalows. These are on the low end of budget accommodation. We're talking between $12 and $16 a night, including breakfast, with a private room and attached bath. Bungalow style with beautiful gardens and patios to walk between the rooms. This one had a pool. Not all of them do, but I was paying $14 a night in 2008 in May, and the Lonely Planet said it was $12.50 or $13 a night, and the Lonely Planet was a year out of date. So even if it's increased, it should still be very affordable. I loved it. The people were nice. The food was good. The gardens were fantastic. I only used the pool once, but it's wonderful to have a pool and a private room for less than $20 a night.
Very nice. Okay.
On the other hand, if you have a large budget, there are tons of resorts that you can book in advance at all different price scales. When my parents stayed there in the 90s, they stayed at the Amandari Resort. So they asked my friends and I if we wanted to go check it out, and they said that they would pay for us to have a drink there. So we hired a taxi, went out to the Amandari Resort, and they offered to show us their rooms. So they took us to a room that was two stories high with all teak wood and rose petals strewn all over the bed and a private pool in the backyard. And that room was $2,000 a night. That's not where my parents stayed, but that's the high end. So Ubud and Bali has something for everyone.
All right, then. And was the drink there as much as the room at Sonia's house?
Yes, I think it was. But it was good. And the view was incredible. They have this swimming pool that overflows. So it's like the surface of the water is just at the same as the surface of the cliff. And then below it is a gorge filled with tropical trees.
An infinity pool.
It's, yes.
I hope you took a picture of that, because that's going to be the cover of Travel and Leisure magazine, is always an infinity pool looking off at the sunset or something like that. So there's your opportunity.
I have a picture of it, and you may show it in your podcast.
All right. And then where do we go from there?
In addition to the cultural capital of Ubud, of course, you should explore the rest of the island. Bali is famous for the Pura, or temple, spelled P-U-R-A. And there are these beautiful temple complexes with these, gosh, I don't know how to describe it. You just have to look at the enhanced podcast that Chris puts together. But different roofs on top of roofs on top of roofs, so it looks kind of like a serrated edge of a knife going up really high in the sky. And there's like 50 or 60 of them on the island, and some are more famous than others. I went to about 5 or 6, and after that, I felt like I'd seen enough because they're all about the same. But they are absolutely gorgeous and beautiful, and I'm not going to recommend one over the other.
Okay.
You do have to make arrangements. Every hotel has chalkboards in front of it offering tours, and they're all about the same price, and they all go to about the same places, and they're probably all the same minivan that picks you up at the same time and takes you to the same place. So anytime you're in Bali, you'll be able to visit and see anything you want.
And the tours are affordable. When you're staying at the $15 a night place, you're paying something similar for a tour? Or?
Yeah, I think they're like $20, $30, including lunch, something okay. like that. They're affordable, but that's partly how they make their money, I think. So inside of Ubud, one more thing is, of course, shopping. And I'm not going to go into detail, but you can buy arts and crafts and anything else you want to take home. Bali is famous for different wood carvings and stuff like that.
Okay.
Outside of Ubud, the most famous place in Bali is probably Kuta Beach, spelled K-U-T-A. And that is the Miami Beach of Bali. It has high-rise hotels, nightclubs open all night, bars, and that kind of a scene. So we went ahead and stayed there one night, and we went out drinking and partying, and it was pretty fun. It was really cool. But some people, that's all they know. They fly into Denpasar, which is the flight capital of Bali, and then they go to Kuta Beach, and they stay there. And it's a little nicer than Miami Beach, but it's still different than what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Ubud, like I said, is the cultural capital. And then on top of those two places, which are kind of the must-see points, you should definitely get out of the city and go see all of the different volcanoes and temples. I went scuba diving in a shipwreck that I arranged by a phone call to a dive site, then rented a motorcycle and went down there to the dive site, and they picked me up and took me to the shipwreck, and I went scuba diving.
Okay. What was the biggest surprise?
The biggest surprise? I forgot about that one.
Even the question was a surprise.
Oh, the biggest surprise was how wonderful the hotel was, I think. I just didn't expect it. After having stayed in Asia, and I'd been paying about the same amount for hotels all over the place, but they just didn't have people who were quite this kind, and with a breakfast that was that good and a pool attached and these beautiful gardens everywhere in Bali. It just gets so much rainfall that it's just so wonderful to walk around and enjoy the environment and the landscape.
Okay.
Another big surprise was the amount of rain. I rented a motorcycle, and it was very challenging to drive in the rain. I ended up having to park a lot and wait for the rain to stop. Luckily, the rain does stop frequently, so it's a tropical climate.
Right. There's a reason why it's all that green.
Yes.
Okay. You mentioned using the Lonely Planet. What did they recommend that worked for you? What did they recommend that didn't work for you? And what did they miss?
Well, as with all guidebooks, it might be a little out of date. So you should rely on your hotel and postings around the town. They were very good at recommending hotels, but as everyone knows who uses the Lonely Planet, you run into the danger of the hotels listed in the Lonely Planet having a 20% increase in cost compared to the ones who don't, and the ones who don't are just as nice. Mm-hmm. So I would say that you could definitely stay in any hotel you find in Bali.
Okay.
As far as what the guidebook got wrong, it recommended a shadow puppet show in Ubud, and that was a cultural event that I thought would be fantastic. You know the Balinese shadow puppets. I'm assuming you can show an image on screen. It's very famous, so of course I went, and it was the most boring, horrible cultural event I think I've ever paid for in my life. It started off fine for 30 seconds. There's a candle-lit screen, and a person puts a shadow puppet on it, and he's speaking in Balinese or a local dialect of Indonesian. And he started moving the puppets around, and it was really boring, and he knew it. So to make the crowd more excited, he started making fart jokes, and then he dropped lines about Monica Lewinsky. It was completely absurd. I kept looking at my watch. So I don't know whether to recommend it or not. It's kind of cool to see once for about 10 or 15 minutes, but don't stay for the whole thing.
And what was the highlight? Best day?
The best day in Bali had to be with my motorcycle. I've rented a motorcycle a few times in Southeast Asia. Bali was the easiest place to do it and to drive it around. I didn't feel like it was dangerous at all. And it was just so wonderful to go driving up into the mountains, getting lost and asking locals for directions, which I didn't understand what they were saying. And it's a small enough island that if you're going uphill, you're going to the volcano. And if you're going downhill, you're going to the beach. So you can find your way around. People were so nice. I ran into the most incredible little things that I didn't even know existed. I bought tropical fruit at a roadside stand, mangosteen, bananas, passion fruit, so fresh. There was a guy there with a bat just hanging off the side of the road. He had clipped its wings or something or tied it up, and he was charging tourists to go touch it and feed it. And although I felt sorry for the animal, I did feed the bat a banana and it licked my finger, and it was the cutest little thing. It has like a little dog bear face, and I'd never seen a giant fruit bat like that up close and personal. I'm talking 2 feet from foot to head, or a foot and a half. Huge, giant fruit bats. Beautiful creatures.
I think you just talked my wife off going right with that one statement right there, because she still remembers the flying foxes in Sydney, Australia. So,
but these were pets.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have any other bats swoop down and attack my head like I did in the caves in India or something like that. Bali is, I think I've said it before, a place for anyone to travel to. I can recommend it to anyone. Rest of Indonesia, other places in Southeast Asia, it might depend on your personality and what you enjoy. I think anyone in the world could go to Bali and enjoy themselves, because there's nightlife, cultural and arts, hiking, backpacking, camping, scuba diving, renting a motorcycle and driving around, lying on the beach, massages, good food, dance performances, shopping. Oh, God, I think I bought 4 or 5 pieces of art. Some of them are still rolled up in a box waiting for me to frame them here. I'll just tell you a quick story. As far as getting to Bali, most people would fly in, and I did fly out, and it was comfortable. It's a small airport. It's easy to do and cheap if you use AirAsia. But getting there, I made the mistake of planning a trip from Indonesia, from Java. And after trekking around a volcano all day from sunrise till sunset, I went down and slept at a hotel and then was woken up the next morning to get an air-conditioned bus to Bali. And they messed up and they couldn't find the aircon bus that we'd paid for, and instead sent us in the wrong direction in a minivan to catch a different bus that was a local bus, and it took about 24 hours to get to Bali. So we were stuck on a non-air-conditioned bus without free water and food like we'd been promised, with local musicians getting on the bus playing for us to try to busk for money. And then there's a little ferry that just covers a gap between the island of Bali and the mainland of Java. And of course, the bus had to wait 1.5 hours on the ferry for the ferry to take us across, which was just a 15-minute ferry ride. But yeah, flying in, much, much easier.
Okay. What do you wish you'd known before you went?
I wish I had known how great that little island on the bottom of Bali is. That's my one regret, is I didn't make it. If you look at a map of Bali, there's like another little volcano outpost that's attached to Bali by a thin peninsula, isthmus, I guess you'd say. And the photographs at sunset down there are gorgeous. And I tried to make it there, but didn't make it.
Okay.
I also kind of wish I had more time. I would have definitely gone on to Komodo and Flores, where you can see fantastic nature and be surrounded by less tourists. The one downside of Bali is that it is tourist central.
Sure.
But of course, that makes it so that it's very, very comfortable. People speak English, or if they don't, they have English printed that you can point to.
Okay.
And it's so easy to get around, so easy to enjoy. And unlike most places that are over-touristed, the people are so kind and they love tourists. They don't feel like it's like a different culture. They really appreciate you and you appreciate them. And it's like a give and take, a sharing of culture. It's not as exploitative or uncomfortable as other places I've traveled to.
And then you mentioned food. And the only thing we've talked about food so far is some of the fresh fruit, which obviously being a tropical destination, other things that you would recommend?
My favorite meal had to be nasi campur with lawar, which is a vegetarian platter I got at a local restaurant. There's also plenty of meat, I think. But as a vegetarian, it was easy enough. Mm-hmm. This plate is a smorgasbord of flavors, including a tofu curry, a sweet tempeh, a giant cone of red rice that just sticks way up in 3D on top of your plate, yummy cooked jackfruit, and a soup. Plus, after you're done, if you have any room left, you can order a delicious dessert.
One question in terms of clarification. You talked about temples, and my recollection is that Bali is predominantly Hindu, while Indonesia is predominantly Muslim. So this is correct. Kind of a Hindu enclave within Indonesia. So these are Hindu temples that you were going to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's fascinating. Historically, the Hindu expansion that made it all the way to what is today Vietnam also made it all the way to Bali. And then afterward, there was a Buddhist expansion, but that did not make it to Bali. Now, the mainland of Java has tons of Buddhist temples. So Bali ended up being an island of Hinduism even before the modern era. Then later, with the historical time of the Arab Golden Age, the Muslim Golden Age, Indonesia became Muslim through trade relations. But Bali remained separate from that. And so it has a different form of Hinduism that's unique to Bali. It's not like any other form of Hinduism anywhere else. Their temples have a unique architectural style. Their religious traditions include putting these little tiny banana leaf offerings 5, 6, 7 times a day all over the street in front of temples. And you have to kind of watch where you walk. But if you step on them, they understand and they're very forgiving.
Interesting. Who is the most memorable person you met?
Probably Ketuk Lier. He was the fortune teller mentioned in Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love book. And he was just hilarious. I videotaped him, and I have audio of him putting his finger on each person's palm and saying, "You are a good, good boy." Yeah, speaking to my friend who's a 45-year-old man, "You're a good boy." It's a little unusual. But he was so loving and so kind and so full of character. I think that's why he made such a great impression on the author, Elizabeth Gilbert.
Okay. Anything else before we wind this down?
I didn't mention massage. I'm a little bit of a massage connoisseur.
Okay.
And I try to get a massage in each place I visit. Bali definitely is on the top. Maybe not the very top, but there's massage on the beach. There's massage in little roadside places like in Thailand. And if you're traveling a lot and you're walking a lot, you just have to sit down and get a foot massage, even if you don't want to get a body massage. And it's very cheap. It really increases your quality of life and your enjoyment of your vacation, I think.
Okay. Final questions. One warning you would give.
So the funniest moment in Bali was when I was walking with my camera, snapping photos of baby monkeys and families of monkeys in the overly touristed monkey forest in Ubud, when suddenly one of the monkeys stole a pack of cigarettes and tried to smoke or eat them. It made for a great photo op.
Okay.
These monkeys are totally crazy. They love playing with the tourists. They leap onto tourists. They try to steal bananas, anything shiny. It's very entertaining and amusing, but it's also a little bit dangerous, perhaps?
Make sure that you're careful about your arrangements in terms of transportation because of that time that I got on a bus and it wasn't the one I wanted. There are people who are there who know that tourists come and go and they don't rely on their reputation. So it's better if you book through someone you can rely on, like a hotel person that you know that you're going to come back and spend the night there again so that you can complain to them, rather than someone you don't trust. I didn't get burned that often. I'm a very cautious traveler, but I would just put out the word to you, be cautious and make sure you know what you're getting.
Okay. You're a photographer. The one picture that you took that you felt really captured Bali?
One. Well, as I said before, I rented a motorcycle and drove around, which was a fantastic way to see the island. But unfortunately, it rained a lot of the time I was driving my motorcycle. The moment the rain cleared, the moment it stopped, the landscape is phenomenal. As that light starts filtering through the clouds and the clouds start breaking and the ground is just glistening with rain, I have a few shots like that. I'll give you one to show in the podcast. Absolutely phenomenal. It just speaks tropical paradise.
Interesting. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Bali when what?
Everyone is smiling and you feel extremely comfortable and welcome.
Okay. And if you had to summarize Bali in three words, what three words would you use?
Oh, man. See, it's going to be trite. I'm really worried. My gut feeling.
So that's one of your words.
Tropical.
Trite is your first word. Okay. No.
Bali in three words is probably tropical friendly paradise.
Okay.
But that just sounds so trite. It just doesn't sound like flavorful. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Bali has become a brand unto itself as a vacation destination for a reason. They do it right. It really is a tropical paradise, and it's for Americans a little bit far, and maybe they'd rather go to Hawaii. But
right. Mm-hmm.
Bali's a world away, and it's unique, and it's the best that Southeast Asia has to offer.
Thanks so much, Sam, for coming on and sharing with us your vacation in Bali and your love for Bali. Where can people see more of the photographs that we've been talking about?
If you go to samoppenheim.com, there is a link to travel blogs and photos from all my trips, as well as my fine artwork, and you can contact me there.
Great. And I'll put a link to Sam's website in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the show on Ghana most recently, and it got me so excited about visiting Africa at some point in the future, as well as the show about the UNESCO heritage sites. It got me very excited, and I spent an hour yesterday going through the whole list trying to figure out how many I'd been to, and I found out I'd been to 98.
Oh,
so
my,
I now have
okay.
a goal for the next year to go to two more.
Excellent. Both of those shows, actually, I really enjoyed, and I think in part because the Ghana show takes me back to my one experience in Africa, and I do want to get back also, and I really would recommend that sub-Saharan Africa, there's something very special about it. I've had people who are friends of mine who talk about having spent some time in Africa and going back, and just as soon as they get off the out of the jet and breathe the air of Africa, they are home. And I understand what they're talking about. There's just a very special nature of that place. So,
it's
well,
one
great.
Of the regions I haven't been to.
Yeah, no, it's expensive, obviously, to get to from here. Once you're there, it's relatively cheap. And it's adventure travel. It's going to take you out of your comfort zone, probably. But it is a truly special place.
Speaking of UNESCO heritage sites, there are a few of them in Indonesia, and some of them are side trips from Bali. So someone could easily go to Komodo Island or to Borobudur in Java. Excellent, excellent UNESCO sites.
Cool. Very cool.
I am going to be getting married in the fall, and I'm going to go on my honeymoon in Sicily, and I'm going to re-listen to your podcast three or four times and take copious notes before planning it.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I really think the Amateur Traveler is a wonderful resource for people planning trips. I mean, it's one thing to listen to it the first time through to enjoy it, but I've gone back to places and I've listened to your podcast and taken notes. It's been very helpful.
Well, thanks again, Sam.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great day.
My internet resource this week is entirely self-serving, but it might also help you. Jen Leo, who is one of the co-hosts of This Week in Travel with me, and I started a company to do internet marketing consulting for tourism companies called, imaginatively enough, tourismmarketingconsulting.com. And we started doing a series of webinars. The first one was free, as is the next one. The first one was last week, talking about Social Media 101. We'll have a video of that up soon. And then next week, we'll be talking about blogging. So if you work for a tourism company, you might want to check that out, tourismmarketingconsulting.com. It does look like there's going to be a meetup next week, Wednesday, June 23rd in New York City for Amateur Traveler, everythingeverywhere.com, and thisweekintravel.com, as well as recording a live show of thisweekintravel.com with Gary Arndt. We are not exactly sure about the place. We're getting really close, so keep an eye on the Amateur Traveler website as well as the Facebook page, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And while you're at the Facebook page, enter the June travel contest. We haven't had as many entries. The theme, again, is humor, so I'm looking forward to laughing at your photos in a good way this time. And speaking of contests, remember that you can win a free photo printer from the Amateur Traveler, or at least you can enter to win, but so far there aren't that many entries. You have a really good shot at this. amateurtraveler.com/contest. I've had a couple things come up recently that leads me to believe that not everybody knows the amateurtraveler.com website as well as I do, which is probably true. And a couple of people have asked where a particular photo was taken, because remember, I'm doing a daily photo, and every post that I post these days that is about a destination is geotagged, and that includes the photos, often geotagged to, if you stand on this spot, you can take that photo. Sometimes I'm not exactly sure, and so it's geotagged to the city. Then scroll down to the bottom of the post where it says posted by. If you hover your mouse over that, it will show you a Google map. And the second thing I get is people will often ask me, do you have anything on the site about? Well, every post on the site, so far as I know, is tagged with the country that it's about. And so, for instance, if you want to find something about Italy, you can go to amateurtraveler.com/tag/Italy and see all the posts on Amateur Traveler that deal with Italy. As I get nostalgic about the Amateur Traveler hitting its 5-year anniversary, remember at one point I said I was going to do this for 5 years and then wasn't sure after that, I am planning on continuing at least for now. Jim Roden said, you asked a while back if Amateur Traveler had ever directly invoked excursions in your listeners. I've been meaning to mention that your episode on Sweden was the sole impetus for my wife and I to spend our 10th wedding anniversary traveling the Swedish countryside in June 2008. We were sure to check out some of the highlights mentioned in the episode, the warship Vasa and the Skansken Museum, and since our anniversary landed at the right time of the year, headed to Leksand for the annual midsummer festivities. We wouldn't have even considered going to Sweden if it hadn't been for the Amateur Traveler, and we got the anniversary trip of a lifetime as a result. Thanks, Chris, for the great work you put into the show. And thank you, Jim, for writing. And that's where we're going to bring this episode to a close. If you have any questions, feel free to send them to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And remember your homework assignments, photo contest, photo printer contest, and register to go to Egypt. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Well, thanks so much, Sam, for coming on and sharing us and blah, blah, blah. Thanks, Sam. It is early here. I really thought I'd been doing pretty good so far. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be on your show again.